Welcome to the Crown Council Mentor of the Month program. This is Steve Anderson. From time to time, we invite special members of the Crown Council to participate in our ongoing series of the 20 things that have made me a better dentist. And our guest this month, we've invited to do exactly that. I've known Dr. Ken Guest for nearly two decades, and one of the most remarkable dentists that we've had involved in the Crown Council and that I've gotten to know, and we're looking forward to having him share his wisdom today. Dr. Guest is a native of Coffeyville, Kansas, and graduated from the University of Kansas in 1970 with a degree in chemistry. He married his wife Susan later, and then served in the U.S. as a U.S. naval officer. And then after his service in the Navy, he attended UMKC School of Dentistry, graduating in 1978. After graduation, he opened his first dental practice in Salina, Kansas. He recently retired, but practiced for the last 11 years with his doctor, Catherine Gross, and Dr. Guy Gross, her husband, and Dr. Allison Lesko. He especially enjoys orthodontics and treating sleep apnea and the variety of general practice that allows. Dr. Guest has been very involved in the community, and he's going to talk about that today. But his involvement has included the American Cancer Society, the YMCA, the American Business Club, otherwise known as AMBUCS, St. John's Lutheran Church as a council member, the First Bank of Kansas as a board member. He's a lifetime qualified member of the Crown Council, and is a charter member and past president of the Kansas Society of Orthodontics for General Practitioners, which is an orthodontic study club. He has five grandchildren, and Dr. Guest is, one of the things he'll talk about is he has done a great job of not only building a great practice, but has a great family, has stayed very active in the community, and has stayed very healthy through all of this, and is one of the reasons that we've asked him to share his career's worth of wisdom today, because in our view, Dr. Ken Guest is one who has done it right and continues to do it right personally as well as professionally. So with that, Ken, welcome as our Crown Council Mentor of the Month this month.
Well, thanks for having me. It's quite an honor. I was not expecting this, and I'm quite pleased to be doing this.
Well, we're eager to hear what you've put together here. What we ask is to narrow things down to 20 things that you think have contributed to your success as a dentist, and you've divided these up into four different categories of clinical communication, culture and communication, and continuing education, and then some personal things, which we appreciate. So with that, take it away. We're eager to hear what you have to say.
Okay, well, let's start with the clinical, because I think as dentists, you know, we're very practical, and we want to hear some things that we could do today or tomorrow to help us out. So let's just start with the clinical. The first thing I put down was a peripress. A peripress is simply a syringe that's adapted for the hand. I think most of the guys know what these are and gals know what these are. But the reason I like a peripress is it will numb teeth that nothing else will. When your blocks fail, when your infiltration fails, you can pick up this peripress, and it's an interligamental injection system. And by a pressure system, it injects a very small amount of anesthesia right to the tooth in question. It's really good for first and second molars, and the advantages, among the advantages, are it's got a quick onset. I mean, you can put the thing down and go to work if you've given the block right, if you've hit it. It's also got a short duration, maybe 10, 15 minutes. But, you know, for hot teeth, for instance, like a tooth that needs endo that you just can't numb, if you can get access to the peripress and numb around the tooth, then you can oftentimes get access to that really hot pulp chamber. And then when you do, you can inject down into that, again, with the peripress. It's got some advantages that other forms of anesthesia don't. So that's one quick tip, and I've used it almost my entire career, and I just love it. And it has a little learning curve like everything else.
How often would you use it in it, Dave? Out of 20 procedures, how often would you end up using it?
Maybe one. maybe one.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not an everyday thing. You know, you rely mostly on your regular anesthesia. But boy, when you need it, it pays for itself big time. Next thing I had was simply digital pictures and x-rays, and I think this is, you know, becoming very widespread just because it helps the patient see what is in their mouth. It's always surprising to them, and helps sell a case. When they see what's going on, you've got a lot less talking to do, and it just justifies what you've seen clinically and what you know clinically. But when they see a crack in a tooth or a large filling that's failing, sort of a slam dunk at that point.
Can you differentiate between, when you talk about digital pictures and intraoral camera pictures and kind of what your protocol's been over the last, you know, 5 or 10 years in terms of what series of pictures you take on what patients?
Mm-hmm. Well, we take, of course, the full series of x-rays on patients, and at the same time, we take a full series of digital intraoral and extraoral pictures, you know, the full face, the profile, the upper and lower arches, the side shots with retractors, and the full series, and those are so valuable. You can go back and look at those when you're trying to work up a case after the patient's left, and you see things that, frankly, I'll admit that I didn't see in the mouth when I looked at it from a different angle or a different perspective. So it's very helpful in that regard.
Very good.
The next thing I put down was a product called Interface for Porcelain Repair. And, you know, I bet I'm repeating what some of the other mentors of the month have said, but I guess if I say it again, maybe it means it's just really good stuff. But Interface is a relatively new product for porcelain repair that really works. And, you know, some of these places that it might be useful would be, for instance, you put on a crown or you have an old crown that a patient will chip part of the interproximal porcelain. And it's either, are you going to replace the crown for that, you know, which becomes a food trap oftentimes, or can you repair it and do them a service and save them some money by using Interface to repair the porcelain. And this stuff works really well. I'll frequently use a tiny mosquito diamond to roughen the surface if I can get access to it, and that helps to give it some physical bond also. But it's a good product. Been using it for a few years now. Next thing I have is the 3D imaging that we do in the office. This is a system that, now, first of all, I would like to remind everybody that we're a Ford dentist practice, so the some of these expensive things like this 3D imaging, you know, we can afford to do. And it's been amazing what we found. The first week that we had this machine, of course, the first people that want to use it are the staff and the docs. They want to see what your sinuses look like. So we had staff that we some of the team members that we took these images of. One of the first ones, Dr. Guy Gross, found a tumor on one of our administrative assistants. She went for referred her immediately, and she went for treatment. And I think we could say, if it didn't save her life, it certainly made the treatment a lot easier. And it was something that she had been to an ENT for symptoms, and they hadn't diagnosed a thing. And a guy found this tumor on one of the first scans that we did. So the 3D scans are amazing. You know, you can see things like when you're doing endo, you can literally slice through teeth, you know, a half millimeter at a time and see which way the roots curve. For wisdom teeth, you can see which way, where the roots are situated compared to the nerves and things like that. So it gives you a tool that's just unbelievable in the amount of things you can do. I know the other docs will use it for implants, for implant placement, and it's very, very accurate in that regard.
So in your practice, tell me in what situations you typically will use it.
We have started doing 3D scans on every new patient and on the recare patients also. And if, when it's time to do a full mouth x-ray, instead we'll try to do the 3D scan and maybe bite wings, things like that. But we're trying to get these on as many people as we can, and especially new patients. Just standard procedure now with new patients. And again, you know, it's like the intraoral pictures or even the digital x-rays, which are amazing, and I sort of glossed over those because I think the advantages of those are probably widely known at this point, but when you can magnify things and rotate things, like for instance with the 3D scans, we have a complete picture of the entire skull from the neck up, and you can rotate this 3D in three dimensions in space, and it's pretty amazing. So there's a wow factor to it, as well as having practical application.
So when you do that, just to drill down a little bit further, mm-hmm. when you include all of these diagnostics that you do on most every new patient, which of these do you actually charge for, and which are just included in as just a part of what you do?
Well, I'm not sure I understand exactly, but the 3D scan, I mean, there's a separate charge for that. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, there's a charge for the 3D scan, of course, and the exam, and the digital pictures, there's also a charge for that. But we try to keep those, you know, where they're reasonable, because we'd rather have the information than the money, I guess you might say.
You got it.
It's important to us and to the patient, so.
Perfect.
We figure for. We're doing a good diagnosis, and that's step number one.
Okay.
Next item I had under clinical was sedation of several types. We offer basically four types. Of course, nitrous oxide is the first level, and then the oral sedation, or also called sometimes one-pill sleep dentistry, is the next. And then Dr. Lesko is able to offer IV sedations in the office. And then we've been bringing in MDs, anesthesiologists, and practitioners to actually do complete anesthesia in the office and do full mouth reconstruction on apprehensive patients and on kids and just people that need that level of sedation and just can't have dentistry done otherwise. And that's been a real boon. And for the docs, I know it's a whole different way of doing dentistry. It's just 'cause you can get in and work and it's you have access and you have patient cooperation, of course, but it's something that the system has been set up, and of course we have to contract with the MDs and arrange their schedule also. It's been a really wonderful thing to be able to offer to patients. So the next thing I had on the list was radios. We have the radios with the earbuds that every member of the team, including administrative, although they sit theirs to the side, they don't wear the earbuds, but every member of the team has a radio, and we communicate that way in the office. We've got 10 operatories and relatively, you know, large size of office, and trying to find somebody or to communicate something without the radios would be just about impossible, and it's really, really improved our productivity. I would urge any office, I don't care what size you are, to try it. They're not expensive, and gosh, we've had radios. The radio I have on my belt has lasted, I'll bet, 10 years, maybe more than that.
So which one do you use?
I think it's a Motorola, I believe, and yeah. I know that they're available through a company called Kisco. I'll give Joe Steven a plug, down in Wichita, as well as several other places. But radios are wonderful communication devices.
Now, with as many people as you have, just to give everybody context here, you've mm-hmm. got how many total team members?
Well, like you mentioned, Steve, I just retired 2 months ago, May 16th, and up till that time, we had four docs in the office, five hygienists, and a total of between docs and all the team, about 24 or 26, depending on which day of the week it was. So it was a busy place.
All right. So with that many people and everybody's wired, everybody's wired for sound, how have you managed in terms of the protocol of what you communicate over the radio and what you don't? Because that could lend itself to some potential chaos if you got people who love to talk all day on the radio.
And of course, have
you guys put together some guidelines? Yeah.
I think it's evolved over time. We're pretty strict with it. Like, I mean, if you see or hear somebody chatting, you just get on there and say, "Hey, cool the chatter," and that sort of calms it down. But it's just very short messages, and obviously, you know, I think one of the reasons why people hesitate to get radios is they think it's just going to be a constant bother in the ear. But really what happens is you tune out the ones that aren't for you.
Right.
And like a typical communication would be doctor one, op four ready. And that's it. And that would be a call for hygiene, perhaps. Or they might say, doctor one, Jeanette's ready in op five. And so you know the patient's name. You're going, you look at the schedule, see what's going on. And, of course, at times they'll communicate longer messages, but we do try to keep it short just for that reason.
Got it.
The last thing on the clinical was the radios, and that was a communication item. And that leads right into my next segment, which I just titled communication. And there's several things that are sort of bundled under that. The next item I had was morning huddles and team meetings and doctor meetings. It's an element of communication that I think is vital. And, Steve, you probably know that I was sort of dragged kicking and screaming into morning huddles. I didn't do them. I will admit I did not do morning huddles for years, although you preached it and said it was the best thing since sliced bread. And my daughter Kate and Guy and Allison, they instituted morning huddles, and I just had to go. And I've learned by watching what happens in morning huddles that they're a fantastic way to communicate what happened yesterday, what's expected today, and plan for tomorrow. So much goes on in the meetings, it's just you almost have to see it to believe it, the way that our meetings are structured.
I will say I talk about your morning meeting all over the world because with as many people as you have, it would lend itself to potential chaos, but it's one of the most well-run, organized morning meetings I've ever seen, especially with that number of people. And I'll interject this. One of my favorite things about your meeting is the alarm clock. That sits at the top of the stairs that goes off 4 minutes before the meeting is to start, so that that's the signal to everybody that you need to get downstairs and get ready, and so you don't have anybody running around telling everybody let's get started. So a lot of those little things make a big difference.
It does. Well, you know why we have it set 4 minutes early, don't you, Steve? Because if you're early, you're on time.
That's right.
Yeah. Also, once a week there's a 2-hour team meeting. And the docs and staff communicate in those, and then periodic doctor meetings also. So communications is huge. Next thing I have was we have what we called our Big Four, and it's morphed into the Big Five recently that we advertise for. We do a lot of advertising in the paper and also on radio, and the Big Four, or actually the Big Five for us, have been orthodontics, because two of us do orthodontics, cosmetics, dentures and implants, sedation, and sleep apnea. And those are things that we'll target certain ads in the paper or in the media for, and it's been very, very effective. But one thing I would say is you get what you advertise for if it's done properly. If you want sedation patients and you advertise for them, you will get sedation patients, and you just should be prepared to handle them. Is all I'm saying, because they are difficult patients. So,
sure.
I think the reason that we've done this is that really the public doesn't have an idea of a lot of the things we do, such as orthodontics. They might think that the only place that does orthodontics is a specialist, whereas I have done them for 30 years, and Kate's done them since she started. Same thing with especially sleep apnea and sedation. I think those things are pretty much unknown as far as being in the dental realm, but it's getting more and more because the word is getting out there. And we team up with local MDs on those also to try to get referrals on both of those. The next item on my list is something I've been doing since about the first year in practice. I learned to do endodontics one of the first continuing ed courses I took out of dental school, and started doing root canals. And the first patient, the first day that I wanted to do a root canal, they said, "Oh, root canal? I hate those things. I've heard terrible stories. I'm not going to have one of those done." And it was that way from then on, and so I thought to myself, there's got to be a better way to present this. So I stopped doing root canals, and I started doing pulp treatments. Well, a pulp treatment. Now, the patient would say, well, what's a pulp treatment? And my answer was, well, you know, it's a, they'd say, is that one of them root canals that I've heard about? I say, oh, no, no. I said, this is a newer, easier, more effective technique than what they used to see. I said, we end up with the same result, but it's just so much better. You just won't believe it. And boom, done. No objections from then on. And so it's like, you know, I'm really not trying to put anything over on folks, but I just didn't have to deal with that objection to the words root canal. And I know in Crown Council and in TOPS, you've got a list of words that we shouldn't say in the office, and you have a list of words that are better to say in the office. And
yeah,
that's one that I've used, and it's been very effective. And so I don't have to go through that root canal story all the time.
I like
it. It's just a little gimmick, but I like it too. So that's the end of my communication section. Next one's on culture and continuing ed. The first thing that I have is my orthodontic study club that I've been a member of for over 30 years, the Kansas Society of Ortho for GPs, which, of course, we abbreviated to KSOGP for obvious reason. It's a group of like-minded general dentists and pedodontists that would get together about three times a year, and we would study mainly orthodontics, and occasionally we'd have a general practice type of subject. That's been very, very valuable, and I, you know, appreciate the guys that are in there a lot. And then right along with that, you know, if you're talking about continuing ed, is Crown Council, which, as everybody that's a member knows, is not dedicated to clinical dentistry, but to some of the things that, you know, I've said earlier, like communications and culture and motivation. And I think that's a lot of what we can benefit from Crown Council, among other things. But I'm really pleased to be a member of Crown Council, and I've been to every meeting now. And
you have.
I have, and I'm one of the few, I think. But
and on the front row, on the front row every time.
we try to stake out our seats, don't we?
That's it.
Going along with the continuing ed theme is looking for high quality education, like David Hornbrook and PAC Live. I took many years ago, and it just gives you a new perspective when you see what can be done by experts like David and the folks that are doing these wonderful courses out there. And as far as Crown Council goes, motivation, you and Haley and all the crew and Greg and your families, oh my goodness, what a wonderful bunch to motivate a guy and to make serious life changes. I was sitting in a Crown Council meeting and made a decision that changed my entire life and the life of my whole family in deciding not to retire real early, but instead to build another building and eventually include my whole family in it. That was because of Crown Council and the folks that were sitting around me at that time. We had a mastermind group, and they really urged me to go forward, and I did.
You did. You made a big jump. I know you're going to talk about that a little later on, but it was a big move. Big move.
It was. Yeah, well, let's just talk about it right now. What happened was we were, I think it was Crown Council number 5, it was the one with the baseball theme, and
yeah,
we were sitting there, and I had this idea to build a new office because I was considering, I'd outgrown my other office, and so long story short, I decided to build an office across the street. I made it big enough for my expansion, and as it turned out, my daughter and her husband, Guy, eventually decided to go to dental school, and we expanded even more when they made that decision. And then when they moved in, they expanded still again, and it really worked out well. And if it hadn't been for that one meeting, I can remember the time so distinctly, sitting in Crown Council, that wouldn't have happened. But a funny thing that we did when we built the building across the street, I thought, you know, this is a really unique opportunity, and everybody's going to drive by here and wonder, well, what's going in there? What's that hole for? So we put up a sign, a 4x8 plywood sign, and on the sign we said, this cavity soon to be filled. And that generated a lot of buzz. And then when the wood went up for the framing, we put up another sign, took down the first one, put up another one, said, braces in place. And then the next one, I think, was, when we put the roof up, we put one up that said, crowning touch. And we had a sort of a crown across the top of the billboard there that we put up. And then finally, my favorite was when we were getting close to finish, we made a great big plastic, I guess, red and white. It had teeth on it, and it was a great big mouth is what it was. And we put that on one side of the billboard, and it said, "Opening soon." And the mouth was wide open. And everybody got a kick out of those, and they talked about them literally for years. So that was a fun marketing thing to get done. And I've
and
shared
as
that.
I recall that was Susie's idea, wasn't it?
Well, it was. We'll have to give her credit, won't we? Yeah. Yes, it was.
And great word of mouth. You did, just for clarification, you in Salinas, you had three offices, right? Not at the same time, but you grew three times into three separate facilities. Is that right?
Well, no, I had two separate offices, but the new office, I built it with eight ops. Then when Guy and Kate came, they added two more. And so we've remodeled, of course, several times.
Sure.
But I just have the two. Yep.
Gotcha. Well, you've done, for those who have never been to Salina, Kansas, I think it would be easy to say that you built the dental practice in Salina, Kansas. There's, to my knowledge, nobody else in town that rivals what you've built over the years. So you've done a great job.
Well, thanks, Steve. Appreciate that. And the next thing is sort of interesting. We just talked about the physical dental office and what we've done inside. And my next point, as far as culture and CE, is to actually get out of the office. In other words, I think a lot of dentists, and I was probably like this early in my career too, we tend to be sort of like cloistered monks. You know, we go to our office in the morning and we work and we finish up and we go home and we come back the next day and we work some more. And I think getting out, getting involved in the community is important. And part of that also, of course, is continuing ed, is just getting out of your local area and seeing what the world has to offer, because it's there's a lot going on out there. This service club that I'm in called AMBUCS, which was the recipient of half of our Smiles for Life funds for many years, we work with handicapped kids and try to provide ability for them to move around with enabled trikes and things like that, and we also build ramps and stuff like that.
On that point, Ken, because I think there's a really important application here. Some people may or may not have heard of AMBUCS, and I the group itself is not really the focus of my comment here so much as the fact that in your town, that just happens to be the organization that really kind of, I'm not going to say runs the town, but when you took me to that meeting a couple years ago, it was very clear to me that the movers and the shakers and the who's who of Salina, Kansas belong to that group. And in one room, you've got all the influence in that town gathered together. Is that a fair evaluation?
It is. And I don't know if I could put my finger on why it is, but I think it's because, A, we've got a good mission. B, we have fun at our meetings. And C, it's just a great bunch of guys to be associated with. It's, it reminds me of Crown Council. It's sort of the same thing, and I think that's why Crown Council has been so successful and has grown, because you guys are always innovating and you're doing new fun things for us, and appreciate that. Yeah, AMBUCS is quite a group.
I think the point here is that most every town has a group like that. It might be Rotary in one town, it might be Kiwanis in another, it might be AMBUCS in another, it might be, it may go by different names, different communities. The centers of influence tend to gather in different spots, but you clearly tapped into the place where the influence is in town. And as my observation was just seeing how that whole, just the one meeting that you invited me to, how that unfolded, it was very clear that in one place, you get your arms around the who's who and the influence of town, and over time, I'm sure that many, if not most, of those people have become and are our patients.
Absolutely. It's a great place for patients and referrals, and an amazing amount of business actually gets done in our Friday morning meetings. We meet Friday mornings at 7 a.m., believe it or not. And this morning, for instance, we had probably 100, 110 guys there. So it's a very active club.
That's great.
Well, my next point, Steve, under culture and CE was don't refer out procedures like endo, pulp treatments, and orthodontics, but learn how to do them yourself. That's part of the fun of this game that we have of being a general dentist is you can do a little bit of everything and as much of one thing as you want, and you don't have to worry about being a specialist or anything like that. But I would highly encourage people to learn how to do endo, learn how to do ortho, implants, a lot of things, whatever turns your crank. The next thing on my list was be flexible. Such things as, the new office that we've discussed was one place where it was a big decision. It was a hard decision, but boy, it turned out to be a good one. And the other was going from solo practitioner, which I was for 24 years, to group practice, which was for 11 years. And it was an easy transition, but it was a fantastic transition because, for one thing, I got to practice with my daughter and her husband and Dr. Lesko, who are great individuals. But it's just, it's just an example of flexibility that I would encourage. Next thing sort of goes along with some of the things we've talked about before, which is copy genius. We do a lot of that at Crown Council, I think, because there are some real geniuses in Crown Council, and I've tried to pick their minds. That's the reason why in Crown Council we have the mastermind groups and why you've encouraged that so much over the years. But also to find a mentor, find somebody that knows more than you, and whether it's in dentistry or whether it's in other aspects of life. Of course, the best example of that probably is you and Haley. That's one of the Crown Council Foundation stories. But I would say if you can find a mentor, whether it's how to shoot a gun or ride a horse or take care of a motorcycle or whatever, find those folks out there. And the way you do it, it's a simple three-letter word. You just ask.
That's right.
Because if you ask, you will receive. And that's something that's been drummed into us over the years. And sort of along those lines, I'd recommend one of my favorite books, Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, which has been on so many lists. It's crazy, but until you read it, you don't know why. Next, I would say one of the things that I wish I could claim, but I have observed, and I'm gonna claim it on my top 20. But it's a culture of excellence. This has really been brought to the forefront in our practice by my partners. The things they've done to make this practice excellent, and I'm talking about a world-class scale, if I could just brag a little bit on them. But they've done that. The advantages to a team is that when you've got a culture of excellence, everybody knows what's expected. It's not second best. It's not third best. It's not okay. It's excellent, and you do whatever it takes. And by doing that, by having that culture, you empower the members of the team to be able to do things on their own. For instance, if a team member sees a temporary that's broken or chipped or something like this, and they think, well, should I or shouldn't I replace this? They know to replace it. It just sort of trickles down into all aspects of the practice. So I guess if you've got a culture of excellence, you better pay people excellently. And that's my next tip is bonuses for the team. Everybody needs incentive. And I think bonuses, while certainly not, the number one incentive, I really truly don't believe that. I think it's important because if a team knows the numbers of the practice, which I think they should, they're motivated, and they also have pride in achieving a goal, achieving something for themselves, but as well as the practice. So there's a lot to be said for having bonus, and there are probably as many bonus systems around as you can shake a stick at, but that's one tip that I would give.
Let me ask you a question about that real quick in terms of at what point in your practice experience did you start sharing numbers and what was really going on with your team? Is that something you did from the very beginning, or was there a point in which you made that shift and started really sharing more of what was really going on.
I did it from day one, really.
Did you?
Yeah, I think that I just wasn't afraid of it, and I guess you have to trust your staff, you have to trust your team, that they're going to be private with your numbers, and I've never been let down in that regard, and but I think it's really important that the team knows the numbers, because it's their production, their livelihood, and it's motivation for them. They love it when a doctor hits goal, because they know everybody's been a part of that.
Sure.
So, and you know, along with the bonuses too, consider continuing ed trips as part of a bonus as well as the monetary, because if they know the bonuses of production, they should know how much it costs to take a team on a trip, because those are very, very large expenses that they're being laid out to take somebody, like to Crown Council, for instance, or just, you know, the next town. So that could be part of the bonus also. My next category is personal, and I'll start with something that my family did years ago when my two kids were smaller. My daughter Kate is just, well, I better not tell her age, but she's in her 30s, and so is my son. So we used to have family meetings every Sunday. We'd sit down for dinner, we'd have dinner, and then we'd get out a notebook, a spiral notebook, and we'd put the date down, and we'd just see what we had from the week before and what we had this week and what items had come up you know, what was on everybody's agenda. And I recently found that notebook, and I just got such a kick out of reading back through some of the things we discussed.
That's
but
great.
It was, you know, a way for us to work through issues, mostly good, but, of course, you know, with family, you've always got some bad stuff to work through, too. So that was one thing that we did, and it's so easy to do. But one thing that you have to do is you got to be together as a family, and that's the whole deal, I think. But family meetings. Next is, and again, these things, I know everybody has these on their list, but it's what I've done, it's worked for me, and the next thing is set goals. I would sit down January 1st every year, because it was always a day off, and it was just a certain day, and I would write down what I wanted to do for that year, and of course, in Crown Council, we preach have your goals written down and keep them with you and review them daily. Now, I wish I could say I did that. I didn't do that all the time, but it's amazing how if you just write them down and you review them periodically, how much you get done in a year.
That's right.
Of course, you got to work out a plan based on your goals. Work out a plan, a stepwise plan to get toward those from where you're at the present time. So, the next two I have are things that appear in just about every ladies' magazine. You can probably see them on the cover of some of these. The next one is just simply exercise. If I hadn't started it at our local Y here right after I moved to town, I don't think I'd have been able to work 35 years as hard as I did. But if you have the muscular support for your frame when you're leaning over a patient, or when you're grabbing a forceps to extract a tooth, or when you're just sitting still for so long to do fine work, you know, if you don't have the muscular apparatus to do that, it's really, really difficult. I think about the only effective dentistry that I might have after 35 years is maybe a slightly bowed neck from leaning over. But other than that, I feel good and I'm healthy, and I think it's because of exercise frequently.
Will you share? You have a system for that in terms of not what you do, but when you do it. Because you developed a habit pretty early on to make sure that got done on a regular basis.
Yeah.
When did you do it?
I would typically go after work, I'd go before I went home, because if I went home and, you know, had a cup of coffee or had a little snack, I typically wouldn't get back out. So
yeah.
I'd go to work and then I'd go over there. And you know, some days that was very difficult to do because you're just beat after work some days. Because dentistry, and that's the point I wanted to make, that everybody, I'm preaching to the choir here, but dentistry is hard physical work as well as mental
sure.
work. But if you're not in shape and you can't do the physical part, you're going to be in trouble. So my encouragement would be to exercise. And like I say, we had a fine local Y here, which helped me stay on track, and it's very convenient too, which helped. Well, that's 20, Steve, but I got a bonus.
Excellent.
And my bonus here is, and don't roll your eyes on this, okay? But it's eat right.
Yeah.
And what I'm going to do, I'm not even going to go any further than that except to give you a book. And the book is called The China Study by Dr. T. Colin Campbell, C-O-L-I-N, Campbell. And that book is probably one of the most, that had the most impact on me, not only in what I ate, but in my overall health, I think, because it's a story of, as the name implies, the China Study is the largest study that's ever been done on nutrition and its effects on populations, and I mean huge populations in China. And the results that this man found, this doctor found, were astounding, and I would highly encourage people to pick up a copy of the China Study.
Excellent. That was a rapid fire, which I know is the result of a lot of thought time to distill that down to some really key points. To wrap up, I'm going to ask you impromptu here to identify just a couple of things in a couple of different categories. And one of the things that I admire most about Ken Guest is after 40-plus years in practice, and not only are you in great shape and you didn't quit because you had to quit, you just decided that you're ready to go on to your next adventure.
Mm-hmm.
But you are a great model of a great family. And I think one of the things that when I look at the relationship that you have with Susie and that you have with your kids and now your grandkids, you not only, you know, did you go home from work each night and had something to go home to, but now after 40-plus years of practice, you've got a great relationship to move forward with your whole family, which is key. You mentioned the weekly meetings that you had as a family. Maybe you could just give us a little bit of insight on what you think you've done on the family side of things to create a great family culture so that now on the other side of your career, you've got a great marriage partner to enjoy the next phase of life. Any other things that come to mind there?
Well, yeah, I do. First I'll give great credit to Susie. She chose, when we first had kids, to stay home with the kids. And I know that's a difficult decision to make these days, economically and socially. And that was a huge impact on my children because they had a mom there when they came home. They had somebody that, you know, would make cookies for them, et cetera. That was a large part of it. Another thing that I think kept me happy and able to be glad to have a family here was the fact that, you know, I had a chance to travel with continuing ed. And so it gets you out of town a little bit. And when you leave and you travel, you really appreciate your home so much more. And every time I'd come home, I'd think, golly, I'm so glad to be here. And I can't wait to get back home. Somebody famous, I think, said it takes a village to raise a kid. And along those lines, we had what we called the Moms Club, which if your kid got out of line anywhere in town, the Moms Club would be calling you right up and tell you what your child did. And so it was not just Susie and I raising these kids. It was our friends and all that. And we've just got a great place here and good schools, too, which is amazing. But on a personal basis, I think we just we listened to our kids, and we didn't let them get away with a lot. I mean, one of the things I did, Steve, which I didn't put on my top 20 list, but I did periodically, is when I'd have a family of come in that had kids, and the moms would be sitting in the rooms, and the kids were just great kids, you know, and they'd look in the eye and give you a handshake and ask you a question once in a while, which would roll you over. I'd always ask the parent, I'd say, at the end of the appointment, I'd say, would you share with me what you've done to raise such a great kid? And they were amazed by the question, but I was serious. And I got some good answers over the years, but one of the best was, and you sort of have to take this tongue in cheek, was this mother said, I never stop hollering at him, which to me meant she was given mid-course correction all the time, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's important. You can't just expect kids to raise themselves. you've got to be involved, and you got to give them correction. You got to give them discipline, and I think that's important. And I mean, you know, discipline with love. I don't mean, you know, spankings or something like that. That's not part of it, but just discipline with love. So,
thanks for sharing that, and thanks for sharing all of your condensed wisdom today. I've enjoyed listening to all that, and there's some great points for further development there, and appreciate the advice. And we are looking forward to the next chapter and what you're going to do next. And,
so am I, Steve. It's interesting. We've got my son Scott is moving back to town, so I'll have 5 grandchildren in town as of the end of this month, and I'm just so excited for what's in his future and the practice too. The practice is just going great, and I have left the dental practice in very, very capable hands with Kate and Guy Gross and Allison Lesko. They are fantastic partners.
Well, you built it to last, and you've done a great job of transitioning it now to the next phase. So, congratulations.
I had a lot of help, Steve, including from Crown Counsel and you. I appreciate everything you guys have done.
Thanks again for sharing your top 21
You're welcome.
With us.
This
today.
Has been fun. Yeah, I always enjoy talking to you, and we just haven't ever recorded it before, have we?
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to distill all that so that thousands of others can benefit from your lifetime of work. So I appreciate it very much.
My pleasure.